Let's record this. Okay, so first of all, I want to welcome everybody to the call. Karen, I'm going to come back to you in a second. I want to welcome everybody to the call. This is Daryl Davis. Welcome to the Power Hour. That's how we say it in New York. And I'm just going to go over a couple of things. I know for some of you, this is maybe your first time on the call. And let me just give you an idea what we do on the call. It changes a little bit from time to time. But the main purpose of this call is for you to ask me any questions that you have about your business and for me to give you some coaching and advice. Now, here's what's real important is that while I'm going through this call, it's really easy to get distracted. You know, you might be in your car. You might be on a speakerphone. You might be in the office. And you want to really try your best to not get distracted by the visual stimuli that you might have in and around your where you are right now. When I give somebody some coaching, you may say, well, that doesn't specifically apply to me. But here's something I want to say to you. Number one is what I'm coaching somebody on may not apply to you now, but it might apply to you in the future. That's number one. Number two is it's possible that in what I'm saying, you can adapt the concept or technique that I'm sharing to your specific situation. Okay, so in other words, what you really have to do is listen for the value for yourself. Okay, so you have to cause the value. Don't be passive and just listen, oh, this doesn't apply to me, and then you stop listening. All right, that's that. The other thing is I may be referencing the digital magazine that we post on the website every month, the powerprogram.com site. You need to get your username and password to see that. And if for some reason you lost it, there is a link on there that says lost password that usually works. If that doesn't work, you'll call my office and go to the Power Agent extension, and somebody will help you with that. The last thing I want to say is I think that's it for now. No, I'm thinking there's something else, but I can't think. Oh, yes. The best thing to do, if you guys want some coaching, get some advice from me, is to email me ahead of time. Now, my email is on the powerprogram.com website, where when you click Ask Daryl a question, it does come to me. So that's the best thing. Like, I've got several power agents who have asked me questions. I'm ready to answer them. I wrote my notes, and we're going to get into that for a second, in a second. But in the meantime, let me just take care of Karen, who was saying that she had this listing that she's, I think, made a mistake on. So I'm going to give her some coaching now. So, Karen, you're still with me, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Karen?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay, good. Now, Karen, so if I understand, you had the 6-point-something million, you got a 6-plus million listing. They listed with somebody else, and it expired. Is that right?
No, when I called on the FSBO, when I realized that they were listed with RealMark on the MLS. However, yep. I still went on to my listing presentation, and I think it's $295 or $395, so she could be on MLS with RealMark. However, she's advertising on her own as FSBO.com, and so
gotcha.
I kept in contact. Yeah, right.
All right, so Karen, so for everybody here, so Karen, correct me if I'm wrong. So what you did is you went on this $6 million listing. You got the appointment from the Sure Results class with me.
Mm-hmm.
You called,
mm-hmm.
You went over there, you found out that she's listed with a discount broker where she paid $300 and she got on MLS.
Right.
And then what you did is you agreed to at least run an ad for her to try and see if you can get the property sold. Is that right?
Yeah, I've had a couple feature ads offered to me in the several months. She's said next month, and finally she agreed May 14th for me to do the feature ad, but I want to use it as the catalyst for her to finally say, okay, she'll list with Diamond Homes. Now I don't know how to cross over from what I offered her to now getting the listing.
Yeah, so it's really... By you, for everybody on the call, you doing any kind of work, showing a house to showing a FSBO to another buyer, running an ad, doing a public open house, any of those things, if you do that without them listing with you, you make it actually harder getting the listing, not making it easier. Because there's so many things that you're sending out to them subconsciously. Number one, you're telling them, I'm willing to work for free. Number two is that you don't have enough respect for yourself and your abilities, and that you're not worth having somebody sign with you first before you lift up any kind of energy to try and get the property sold. So I think that was a big mistake, Karen, okay? Now, unfortunately, you can't backpedal. So the only thing I would do is let the ad run, so you're going to have to wait till the ad runs. And as soon as the ad runs, before you get any results from it, because if you don't get if you run the ad and you don't get response, then it actually hurts you. Because she's going to expect you to sell a house from the ad. So if the house doesn't sell, well, then your advertising doesn't work. I'm definitely not going to list with you. Okay? Do you know what this woman does for a living?
I don't think professionally she's engaged in any type of business. The husband is a forensic doctor in New York, which he commutes, and he's hardly ever home. The kids are in college. I think she's a stay-at-home mom.
Okay, so, you know, when somebody owns a $6 million property, they're a professional, right? So part of what I would do is, after you run the ad, is I'd go over there, have a conversation with her, say, you know what, this really doesn't work for you to do what we're doing. First of all, the fact that you went with this discount broker to get on MLS, the problem that you have there is that's like, do you remember me doing the analogy about the hammer, or did you hear that analogy, Karen?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so buying for those people that haven't heard this analogy, when somebody does a discount broker approach where they pay $300 and they get on MLS, the analogy that I love that works really well usually is, well, if you were going to build an extension onto your property and you wanted to do it yourself, so you go to a department store, and let's say you go to Sears or Home Depot, and you buy a really expensive hammer. You know, it's made out of titanium, rubber handle, everything. It's $300. When you come home, you put the hammer on the table. Is the hammer going to jump off the table and go build you, you know, an extension? And of course not, because the hammer is a tool, and the tool in of itself does not get the property sold. You have to use the tool, and MLS is just a tool. So all you did was buy a $300 hammer, but you don't have a professional actually doing something with the tool to get the property sold. That's number one. Number two is, if you were going to go to court and somebody was going to sue you, would you go to court without an attorney and pay for the other person's attorney, the one that's suing you? Well, of course not. That doesn't make sense. Well, that's what you're doing here. Because when you put your house on MLS, you're going to be paying the broker agent, the one that's representing the buyer, their fee. So what you've done is you've put an ad out there via MLS saying, here, all you licensed and trained agents, come work against me and I'll pay you. You don't have anybody representing you in court. And that's what I want to do, is I want to be your representative with the other buyer's agents to represent your best interest. Plus, I want to do all the marketing for you. Now, her husband, the fact that he is a forensic,
pathologist, he's up there.
I would get clear about what his profession is. Honestly, I don't... You know, I know what a forensic scientist is. You know, if he's in the medical field, I would use that analogy perhaps in saying, you know, if let's say somebody did a murder and you have a police officer who discovers the body, are they going to try? Now, they're a police officer. Are they going to try and figure out, like, who did it and do all the forensic stuff, or do they call somebody like your husband? Well, of course they call my husband in. And why? Because your husband, is he good at what he does? Oh, yes, he went to, like, school for, like, 20 years, and he's still paying off his loans, but, you know, he makes $500,000 a year. So, in other words, he's a paid professional, and because he's good at what he does, he gets a good salary. Well, what you're doing here, trying to sell your own property, it's like a police officer trying to do something that isn't his job. Your husband's specialty is forensic stuff. My specialty is taking a property and getting it sold. You trying to do this, you're missing out on what I can bring to the table to get your property sold. One last analogy on this. Do they have any children?
Yes, all college age.
And daughters, sons, what?
I think two sons, one daughter.
Did she get married yet?
She's in the process during, I think, the next couple of months. There's a wedding going on.
Awesome, awesome. So I would also say to her, Mrs. Hanahana, now your daughter's getting married. Let's say that you wanted the best wedding cake for your daughter. So what you do is you go to six bakers, and you say to each one of the bakers, I need a cake. And whoever bakes me the best wedding cake, that's the one I'm going to buy. So only one out of the six, I'm going to buy the cake. The other five, you lost out. Let me ask you, how many of these bakers are going to actually roll up their sleeve and start baking a cake for you? None. Why? Because you didn't give a commitment to one baker to bake you the best possible result. By you going to the realtors and say, hey, listen, whoever gets the job done, that's the one I'm going to give a commission to. You don't have any one realtor rolling up their sleeves trying to get the job done for you the best way they can because you haven't made that commitment. You know, you're trying to save. Do you invest in stocks, Mr. and Mrs. Hanahana? Let me ask you, do you trade your own stocks or do you have a stockbroker? If you were sick, do you have another doctor that you would call? When it comes to taxes, do you do your own taxes or do you have a professional? I don't know your finances, but I'm assuming that $6 million property is a good part of your investment portfolio. Why would you not have a professional who specializes in managing real estate portfolios do it for you? Why would you even think about doing this yourself? You're going to lose in the long run, just like if you traded your own stocks, you treated yourself medically, or you went to court by yourself. You have professionals for these things. That's what they do, and that's why they're successful, because that's all they think about, eat, sleep, and drink. All I do is eat, sleep, and drink real estate. Anyway, did that help you, hon?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right, listen, don't get – I don't know if I hear some depression in your voice about your decision here, but let me tell you something, because you sound a little sad here. Everybody on the call, let me tell you something. If you make a mistake about something, like, you know, whatever that mistake might be. So, for example, Karen made a mistake saying she's going to print an ad. Mistakes are okay as long as you learn from the mistakes. Warren Buffett said success is the worst teacher because you only learn from your failures. I'm not into sports, but my good friend Steve Harney, we were just talking yesterday, and he is tremendously into sports. And he said something to me, so if I screw it up, I apologize. But he said to me that if somebody in baseball hits a 300, that person most likely is going to be in the Hall of Fame. He explained to me what 300 is. 300 means that you hit the ball three times for every 10 times you're up at the bat. That means that people who fail 7 out of 10 times, 70% of the 10 times, makes it to the Hall of Fame. So the problem is that when you make a mistake, the mistake is never the problem. It's if you dwell and focus and let that mistake disempower you and paralyze you. Are you with me, Karen?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Now, Karen, I'm going to ask you to mute yourself. Or I'm going to see if I can mute you. No, I can't. I can't question that. Let me try and do it here. Yeah, I can't mute you. Karen, do me a favor. Hit *6 on your keypad again, and that should mute you. Bye, hon. Thank you. All right, everybody else, here's what we're going to do. Those of you who have called in late, you know, I'm going to go over some notes. I have some people that have emailed me questions ahead of time. I'm going to address those questions first. So people who email me ahead of time their challenges, I take care of them first. Then I'll open it up to the call to see who else has a question or challenge that they want me to address. And but first, before I get into the emails that were sent to me, I want to give you guys a little side tip here, if you will. Just before I got on the call this morning, I was hearing how real estate is doing so well. Well, of course, I've been hearing that, you know, over the past couple of months. But it just reminded me before the call, because I like to watch the news, something came up. So what I did was, let me see if I can help the power agents. If you were to go on Google and you did what I did, I Googled real estate prices. That's all I did. And then I clicked on, up at the top, it says web, images, maps. I clicked on news. So it showed me anything in the news related when it came to real estate prices. On the first page, here's what showed up. ABC News, home prices are surging. CNN Money, home price rise continues to pick up speed. International Business Times, China is now the second largest group of foreigners buying homes. ABC News again, home prices gained for 13th straight month. USA Today, rents and prices are going up. So that was just on the first page. Now what I did is I printed this out to see what it would look like. And I got to tell you something, this very simple technique, gang, is you doing what I just did, printing out the first page of a Google search and showing it to buyers when you're sitting down with a buyer before you take them to show properties. This has got to motivate them to buy. You know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the buyer piece right now because I want to get to the email questions. But with buyers, the best thing to do before you show them any property is to create that sense of urgency, that now is the time to buy. Now, you don't want to tell them now's the time to buy, because if you tell them that, they're not going to believe you, because then they think you're trying to make a quick sale. So you need third-party validation. You're just printing out one page from a Google search showing them, you know what, we are so past hitting the bottom. You know, a lot of buyers waited for the market to change or wait for it to hit the bottom before they started buying. Well, not only have we hit the bottom, but now it's on an uptrend. So we're a little behind the curve here, meaning we probably should have bought a house a month ago. But I'll tell you, we're still in an opportunity for you to get a lot of house for less money than people that did it back in the early 2000s. So let's get going here. Here's what I've showed you. So just that short little conversation. By the way, I searched something else too, the Case-Shiller report, which tracks prices of homes. And here's what they said, that prices are now up. This is as of April. Prices are now up 9.3% from a year ago. And they're on the track of, for the last 3 months, going up at an annual rate of 13.4%, meaning what's happened in the last 3 months, if it continues, house prices are appreciating at 13% a year. So this is, you know, this is a time to buy for sure. All right, now, let me get to the emails. Marie Lundy. Marie, are you on the call? Now, Marie, if you're on the call, you need to unmute yourself, and how you do that is you hit *6 one time on your keypad, and then I'll be able to talk to you. Just do one time. Give it a second for it to kick in. Just one time, *6. Are you there, Marie?
Hi there, Daryl. How are you?
Good, sweetie. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
All right, so thank you for your questions. I know you sent me two, so I'm going to cover both of them, okay?
Okay.
Your question was, you have an upcoming listing appointment, and you were trying to come up with some good analogies for the multiple listing service. Did you go on that appointment yet or not yet?
I did.
Okay. All right, well, that's fine. I'll still answer your question. How did you do on the listing, by the way?
I'm still following up, and I'm hopeful, you know, that I'll get an answer probably by the end of this week. But it did go well.
Okay, good. Is there anything I can do to help you with that besides answering this question in your email that you sent that I'll read in a second for everybody? Can I help you?
Yeah, you know, I'm up against an agent that, quite frankly, the family is friendly with.
Okay.
The friend of the family. So, you know, I think, so I don't know if you have any word on that as far as how I could, you know, compete with a friend of a family. But I gave it my best shot, and I did very well. So it's just a matter of waiting to see which person they're more comfortable moving forward with.
Okay. Well, Marie, here's what I can say. Whenever, and for everybody else, whenever you're up against, we have a friend in the family, or a friend in the business, okay? I mean, it's either a family, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. It's either a friend or a family member who's in real estate. There's a couple of thoughts I have on it. Number one is sometimes that's not always true. Sometimes it's less than truthful, meaning that it's maybe not a close friend, but maybe it's more of an acquaintance. So I just want you guys to be aware that if it's a close friend, it may be an acquaintance. If it's an acquaintance, it may be made up. So that's number one. Number two is what you want to do, what I would do, Marie, you can't do it now because it's after the fact, but next time I would do something like this. If you were the homeowner, I would say, all right, Marie, I want to convey something to you that is so important for you and the friendship of this person. Is this, I'm sorry, Marie, was this a friend or a relative?
A friend of the family.
Okay. Okay. Is this friend, do you care about the friendship with this person? So, Marie, I'm going to role play with you. Do you care? Are you close friends with this person? Do you care about the friendship?
Yes, I do. We've known each other for several years, actually.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, I'm going to say something to you. And by the way, I'm going to preface what I'm going to say with this. If you don't like me or believe I'm a good agent or any of that stuff, I don't want you to hire me. I'm saying that because I don't want what I'm about to say have you think it's about me, okay? But time and time again, when I've seen business and friendship come together, it never works. It's like oil and vinegar. I've seen people who have done business deals together, family members that have broken the family apart. I've seen friendships get destroyed. You know, you have to ask yourself the question, are you committed to selling the house, or are you committed to the friendship? I mean, of course, you'll be committed to both, but do you want to lose the friendship in the sake of selling the house? And here's why I say that, because if your friend is not doing what you think they should be doing, if there's any challenges during the selling of your home, it's going to be really hard for you to be the boss. Because when you're the homeowner, you are the boss. If you're not happy with something that I'm doing, you have no problem telling me, hey, Daryl, you need to step up, or Daryl, I think this is the challenge. Whereas with your friend, number one is you may not feel the same type of freedom. Number two, if you do, your friend may not be receptive to the way you're talking to them, and then that hurts the friendship. So absolutely, if you have a friend who's an agent, you should not go down that path. What you should do is, one of the things that an agent brings to the table is our objectivity, the fact that we're not emotionally attached. Therefore, we can be more effective in negotiating. We can be more effective in marketing. We're committed, but we're not attached. Your friend may be too close to you, and they may also make bad decisions. Does this make sense what I'm saying here, Marie?
It does. Yes, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why when a judge knows in a court case, when they know somebody that's involved in the court case, whether it's the plaintiff or it's the defendant, the judge must step down from the case because they're not going to be objective in how they run the court proceedings. Your friend should step down from this and let you go with somebody that you can be more aggressive with when things are not going the way you want, or somebody you can manage better. Anyway, so that's my thought there. Now,
that's perfect, by the way. Can I just add something?
Sure.
Found out that the other agent was, quote-unquote, a friend of the family after the fact when I followed up with the sellers. I knew that they were interviewing other agents. Now, the follow-up question that I have for you is, during the listing conversation, should one ask, am I being, are you interviewing other agents? And if so, who are the other agents? I mean, do you recommend having that direct conversation during the listing presentation?
I think asking who the other agent is shows a weakness on your part, like you're concerned.
Okay.
So I would never ask, who are you considering? Who else are you talking to? Unless I feel like if I did a strong enough appointment and they can sense that I'm very confident about myself and that question wouldn't hurt that credibility, then I would ask it. But I don't know if I just sounded like I contradicted myself. But let me just make sure I'm clear with everybody. If you are really strong on the listing appointment, like I'm really strong on a listing appointment, no one would ever think that I was insecure. So I could get away with asking the question. I'm just curious, who is it that you're interviewing, if I might ask? If a new agent or somebody who isn't strong on the listing appointment, I wouldn't ask that question. It could actually hurt you. All right, let's see. Now, the analogy for the MLS system, which is what your question was. Everybody, Marie's original question that she emailed me was, I have an upcoming listing presentation. I want to try and come up with some good analogies talking about the MLS. So here's some analogies that I thought of for you, Marie, okay?
Okay.
Let me ask you a question, Marie. If you were going to go buy a present for somebody, it was a birthday party or it's Christmas or Hanukkah, whatever, and you're not sure what you want to get them, but you're going to get them something, where might you go to go find a present for them?
I would go online as a starting place, perhaps.
You go online. Okay, good. And if you were going to go to a physical location, where might you go?
a department store, a mall. I would go to a mall.
Okay, probably the mall, because there's such a wide variety of choices that when you don't know what you're looking for, there's all the different stores. Am I right?
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what the multiple listing system is. The multiple listing system is like you can almost imagine that every store is a real estate office with their own inventory. So what makes it really convenient for a buyer is to go to the MLS system through one of the realtors where we have a wide selection of choices for them. So to me, the MLS is like the mall of real estate. Another example, you said you would go online. Well, it's the same thing, is that Amazon, if I like to shop at Amazon, and to me, Amazon searches so many different places. Well, the MLS is a similar thing. MLS is like the Amazon for real estate houses. And one last example on that, Marie, is if you ever go to a car dealership to buy a car, you have a specific car in mind. If that car dealership does not have that particular car that you're looking for, they have a computer system that makes it easy for them to search the other dealerships to see if they have. So, for example, if you're looking for, you know, a white Escalade with tan interior, and they happen to only have on their property a black Escalade, they can go into a central database where they would look for a white Escalade, exactly what you're asking for, and find another dealership, and then make arrangements to get it to you. And that's what the MLS system is. When you walk into a real estate office, like a dealership, and you say, I want this, 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 and this, if we don't have that house on our lot, we go to our inventory system, the MLS, and we look for the other properties. And that's why we attract so many buyers as opposed to somebody trying to do it on their own.
Perfect.
Did that help
you?
Yes. Okay,
definitely.
Good.
Thank you.
All right, great. Now, you had one last question that you emailed me separately, which was, in most areas, my current marketplace is experiencing a strong seller's market. While I continue to pursue listings, does it make sense to also work with a few buyers, or should I focus my efforts on getting listings only? In other words, is there an ideal seller-to-buyer ratio? Well, let me ask you, Marie, how many listings do you have right now?
I have five, of which four are under contract.
Okay. So in my opinion, the number of shoes that you have in your shoe store, and anybody's been with me before, you know that analogy. You really only have one shoe on the racks because the other four are already taken. Okay. So here's my answer, Marie, is you should be doing nothing but, in a seller's market, getting more listings. Everybody on this call, you should hear what I just said. In a seller's market, even more so, more so in the seller's market, you should just be getting listings. Now, why can I say that? Well, watch. You take a buyer out. In a seller's market, what we're hearing nationally is that the inventory has shrunk. Okay? So there's maybe more buyers than there are sellers. So there's more demand than inventory. So you've got Mary and Joe, these two buyers, that want to buy a house. Now, it so happens that maybe there's another buyer or a third buyer or a fourth buyer that wants the same house. One is going to win. The other ones are going to lose. So if you didn't win, I'm getting that house, what do you have? Zero, nothing, nada. But if you were the listing agent, you still sold the house, period. Are you with me here, Marie?
Yes, absolutely.
So when you work with buyers, you are not guaranteed to make a sale, even when a sale occurs. But if you are the listing agent, you are guaranteed you're getting some. But, Daryl, it might be harder to get listings in a seller's market because some of the sellers think they can do it on their own. Well, that's where the skill comes in on how to communicate on a listing appointment that a homeowner should not be going to court representing themselves, that they should not be doing their own taxes, that they should not be medicating themselves if they're sick. And like all professions, they should not be selling their own home because all of those professions have something in common, doctors, lawyers, accountants, and real estate agents. Number one is you've got to go for specific training in order to be licensed to help other people do it. And number two is in any one of those professions, if you do it yourself, you wind up losing more than you save. If selling a house is as simple as putting an ad in the paper, you wouldn't have to be licensed by the state to help other people do it. So there's got to be more to this. But that's a powerful distinction, Marie, that homeowners can't help somebody else sell their own house and represent them. You have to be a licensed agent in order to do that and get paid for it. So selling a house is like any other profession, doctors, lawyers, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I just went into a different dissertation. Right now I went off on a bit of a tangent.
No, this is very helpful.
Okay, so just because it's more difficult, now here's the, so in a seller's market, those of you, if you keep increasing your inventory, you're actually more guaranteed to make money than taking buyers and showing property because you're competing with more buyers and less inventory. So your chances go down that you're going to sell something this weekend. But the chances go up dramatically if you're the agent with the listing that all the other agents are trying to show. So especially in a seller's market, to dramatically increase your income from zero to six figures in 12 months, which I'm telling you, every one of you can do that, but the business model is you've got to focus on building that listing inventory. Now, there's going to get a point where you can't handle all the inventory you have if you do what I'm telling you. You're going to start getting up into double digits, 15, 20, 30 listings. Now, here's what happens when you get into double digits. All of a sudden, you're going to get a slew of buyers coming to you. Why? Because you've got all these ads, you've got all these yard signs, you've got people calling you for all these ads. So if you've got like, 10, 11, 12, 15, 20 listings, holy Toledo, now you've got these buyers coming to you. Well, that's a good problem to have. But so, Daryl, do I work those buyers? No. I mean, if you want to take a break from listings, You take some weekends, you show the shiny pennies, you have some fun. Yes, you could do that. But you work with them maybe 25% of the time, 75% is still listings. So you would only use buyers and showing property to take a break from going on listing appointments, because listing appointments is work, because you've got to really master the conversation. You've got to be good at moving people from, I don't want to do this on my own. I can do this on my own. I ain't paying you a full commission. Bring me a buyer, then I'll pay. So there is a certain amount of like, it's almost like going to a singles bar every weekend and being rejected over and over again. I mean, it's draining. Not that I know what that's like. It's been years. But that's what a listing appointment is like. It's like you're constantly being rejected. So emotionally, it's challenging. But when you win, and it feels great when you do, Now, going back to what I was saying, you've got 11, 12, 15, 20 listings. You're getting all these buyers. What do you do? Well, at that level, when you start getting to that level of listings, now you bring on a buyer's agent. Now you can, if this is what you aspire to, you can have another agent work under you like a team and give them your buyers to show. Now you're making residual income from the work that they're doing. Anyway, so did that help you, Marie?
Yeah, that was definitely very helpful. Thank you.
All right, sweetie. You're welcome. Okay. Now, next person I have on the call, hopefully you're on the call, Leon. Are you on the call, Leon? If you are, to unmute yourself, hit star 6 on the keypad. One time. Hit star 6 on the keypad one time, Leon. And give it a second for it to kick in. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific. How you doing?
All right, good. How's the call going so far for you?
It's going great.
Okay, well, okay. All right, I'm going to have to send you money so you can say with more enthusiasm next time. All right, Leon, so here's what you asked me. I have two questions. What is the best way to, I love your questions, by the way. I'm going to start with the second question first. How do I handle a situation where the seller has a small dog, a medium dog, or a large dog, or possibly they have two of the dogs? So you've got, it sounds like you have an animal infestation here problem, Leon. So for anybody on the call, whenever you have a listing where you've got a homeowner who's got, you know, animals, here's the thing that I think to do with that. If it's not your listing, you can't control it, Leon, okay? But if it's your listing, the best way to control that, if they don't already have this, tell the homeowner they must go by those gates that they sell at, like, Petco. It's those gates where you can block off a room. And whenever there's a showing, they put the animals behind that gate. Now, I know some of you think, well, Darryl, why wouldn't they just put them in a room? Here's why, because now the buyers can't see the room. But if you have them, let's say, in a kitchen where they can still see the whole kitchen, they can see the animal is safely behind a gate, that's the best case scenario. The buyers don't feel restricted. Now, if a buyer feels extremely ripped off emotionally, if you show them a house, say, yeah, you can see the whole house, but not that room. Mm-hmm. All right, then they go outside, then you move the dogs into the other room, and so there's more chaos than there is in the focus of the home. So we don't want chaos. Shifting dogs from room to room, outside, inside, ba ba ba. Stick them in a room. I'm a dog lover, by the way. I got two. But stick the dogs in a room where there's a gate, so that way people can see the dogs and the room. Does that make sense, Leon?
Any specific room, which any room that would be better?
No, just something that like in my house, I have a large kitchen, and then I have a large eat-in area. Plus, I have my dining room. So I have, when we want to control them, we put them into the eat-in kitchen area. There's a gate there in the door, and actually, it's not the eat-in kitchen. It's the whole kitchen. So my dogs have the whole use of the whole kitchen and the dining area. But if I were selling my house, probably what I would do is my dining room has two entrances. So I would have a gate on both entrances, and I would keep the dogs in there. So somebody could still look in the room and see the room, but not have the dogs touching them. Okay?
Oh, great idea.
You're welcome, Leon. Okay. Now, the other question you had is, excuse me, you said that what's the best way to handle a situation where you have the seller is selling and buying another house at the same time? Well, so they're selling and buying. I got to ask you, though, because there's so many different ways to answer that, so I'm going to just want to pick one scenario to make it easy for people. Is it your listing? Is the seller your seller? It is, okay.
Right.
And, okay, so let me address how to handle that. So, first of all, did they put the house on the market before they started buying?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Number two, did they sell a buyer's agency agreement with you to buy something?
Yes.
Okay, good. So far, it sounds like you're doing everything right. Is there a question specifically you have about these particular people?
Well, I guess my concern is that just the actual physical thing of moving out of one house, having a settlement, you don't want them to be homeless before they can actually move into the second home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, what's the best way, you know, logically to make that thing work, paperwork-wise, and also practicality-wise, that, you know, they don't want to be homeless. In other words, they can't sell the house unless they have a house to go to. And
right. All right. So, Leon, here's how I recommend you do it, is that if they have a buyer who's interested in their property, here's what I used to do. If let's say my seller found a buyer who wanted to go to contract before they found their new home, what we did was we told the buyers that the closing date would be, now Long Island, New York, the average time when I was an agent was 3 to 4 months to close a deal, okay? So I know most of you in other parts of the country, you don't understand that, but that's how we do in New York. So let's say it's 4 months. Well, we would tell the buyer, we'd go to contract, we would say the closing is going to be in 6 months, on or about. What this did was it bought the sellers 60 days to find their new home. Now, Leon, what we always found was that they wouldn't wind up homeless because when you have a seller who's now a buyer, they're in contract. In their mind, they have this bag full of money, like they're ready to go. They're committed because they don't want to be homeless. So they look at the properties that they're looking at more committed to finding the house that works best for them. Do you follow me? They're not window shopping. They're committed to picking something. So if you show them, here's 30 houses on the market, here's the attitude of this buyer who just sold their house. Of these 30, honey, which one are we going to pick? It's not, are we going to pick something? No, they do pick something. So I wouldn't worry about that. I personally haven't had the challenge where my sellers wound up being homeless. Because all right, good.
When they found the house, make up the contract that settlements to coincide, right?
Well, if they find something before their house is sold, depending on the markets on the call, like in New York, we didn't do contingencies, meaning if a buyer goes into contract, they still had to close, even if they didn't sell their house. So there was no back door for them. So this motivated the homeowner to price their property aggressively, so it did sell, so they didn't get shafted with two homes. So that's how we do it in New York. In other parts of the country, they do contingencies, that it's contingent on the house selling. And right. If it doesn't, yeah, right? And there's also a bump-out clause that some states have. But, you know, but in some markets, because it is such a seller's market, there's more and more parts of the country where they're not allowing contingencies, where the homeowner won't go to contract. So you know, I will tell you, where are you from, Leon?
Northern Virginia.
Okay. So you guys have the contingency, yeah? Here's what I would do. If I had a homeowner who wanted to buy a house, and this homeowner did not want to accept contingent on them selling, if I thought the numbers work, like I think it's going to all work out, I probably would say, you know, we could go to contract, and even though it's not contingent on your house selling, there is a back door, and here's what the back door is. Almost all mortgage commitments would be contingent on the homeowner selling their home if they're walking away with equity. Are you with me?
Right, yeah.
So even though the contract is not contingent on the sale, it is contingent on the mortgage. And if the mortgage has a contingency, the house selling, then indirectly there's a house contingency. You follow me?
Gotcha, yeah.
All right. Now, unless the attorney's really savvy, and this is what you'd have to pay attention to, some attorneys are savvy where they'd say that, you know, this is contingent on the buyer getting a mortgage, blah, blah, blah. And if the mortgage commitment is contingent on the house selling, that would not be reason to get out of the contract. Like, they'd spell it out. And now the buyers would really be locked in. So, all right. Good question, Leon. All right. Now, well, no, not Annie, not yet. Sorry, Annie, hang on. Let's see, this is a good one here. Annie, you'll be up next. Wendy Dubiel, Wendy from New Jersey, are you on the call? If you are, hon, I want you to hit *6 one time on the keypad, and that will unmute you. So, Wendy, Eugenia Dubiel, are you there? Okay, so let me tell you what her question was. It was a great question. This applied to most of us on the call. She said, I'm presently taking my pre-license, getting into real estate. I love it. I'm so excited. I'm so glad I found your website. How do I generate potential sellers and buyers starting out? So this is kind of what I said to that I was saying earlier to Marie, and that is for any of you that might be on the call, and if Wendy's on the call or she'll listen to it later, for any new agent, here's what I say. In my book that I wrote, you know, I think most of you know I wrote two books. One, How to Become a Power Agent in Real Estate, and the second book was How to Make $100,000 Your First Year as a Real Estate Agent. And in that book, How to Make $100,000, I say that a new agent should not, absolutely no, take buyers out until they've gotten six listings. And the reason why that is because as a new agent, when you start to, you know, just show property because you think that's what real estate is, that's a horrible mistake. New agents think what real estate is showing houses and selling houses, and that's wrong. It's just like I'm going to do the shoe store analogy again. For those of you who haven't heard it, that if you're going to open up if you want to sell shoes for a living, you can either take buyers into your car and show them show them shoe after shoe after shoe at shoe stores, or you'd have the store with the racks with the shoes. Any business where you're trying to sell something, you need to have inventory, you need to have a location, or even if it's virtual, a website, but you need to have the inventory. So for a new agent, if they have no listings, they've got an empty shoe store. So they have to get listings. Now, I have some suggestions here for everybody. If you're going to recommit to getting more listings in this great market, here's I just wrote out some bullet points, very simple things to build your listing inventory. Number one is make sure that your listing conversation book, whatever you use on a listing appointment, make sure it's strong. You put it together. I prefer the book to be visual. I'm not crazy about iPads, laptops, or folders with stuff in it. That's just my personal style. Especially when you talk to a FSBO, if they think you're doing a sales pitch with a presentation like PowerPoint or something, you're going to actually lose them. So a book is very engaging. It sucks people in. Number one is have a listing book or something that you feel strong about. Number two is pick your days where you're going to prospect, because if you don't like to prospect, you have to make the commitment to the days and the time. Otherwise, you're going to always look to not do it. You know, I'm writing my third book, How to Design a Life Worth Smiling About, for McGraw-Hill. My book's supposed to be done in the next 30 days. I'm a little behind. I'm okay. It'll be out by the end of the year, but I'm behind. And what I notice in writing this book is that when I don't do it first thing in the morning, I never seem to get to it. As much as I have my best intention, like I'm going to go into the office, I'm going to handle some business, I'm going to make some calls, follow up on emails, respond to Facebook, I'm going to do that stuff, then I'm going to go get to the book. It seems like it pushes to 3, 4 o'clock, and then I'm wind up doing the book when I'm tired. So I have to do it first thing in the morning before I get into my day. Because it's hard for me. That's writing a book is the hardest thing that I'm doing. This book is the hardest thing I'm doing. I thought running a marathon was hard. This is harder than that. So when you do something that's hard, you always want to avoid it. So if your energy level is best in the morning and the day goes on, it gets depleted, it's almost impossible to now go do the thing that you don't like to do. So pick your days and times and commit to that. So that's number two. Number three is have good dialogue, so that way you'll feel comfortable making your calls. Now, all of you that are power agents, under the word classroom, when you go to the website, thepowerprogram.com, and you go to the word classroom, that page, you'll see FSBO dialogue and expired dialogue. So you've got it right there for you. Next step is go with somebody on a listing appointment until you feel comfortable. So if you're not comfortable on listing appointments, bring somebody with you so that way you can that knows how to do one, so you can watch it and get a feel for it. Going with somebody, it just is less scary than walking in all by yourself. Even if you're good on listings and you're apprehensive about getting back to it, well, go with somebody, because again, it's like going to the gym with a buddy. It just makes it less painful and more enjoyable. for a new agent, what you could do to add some credibility on a listing appointment is run a full-page ad of open houses. Ask some agents in your office, can I do an open house on your listing? And most agents will say, sure, you can do an open house on my listing. You know, you keep the buyers, but I don't want you to work the buyers, right? I just want you to run an ad and put the ad in the paper, whatever your local paper is, and do this a couple of times. So when you go on a listing appointment, you can show a homeowner, here's the type of advertising that I do for our listings. When they see that advertising, they see that you did two open houses, three open houses, four, five, six open houses, they're going to naturally assume that those are your clients, these are your listings. They're not going to ask you how long you've been in real estate. So that's a way to kind of get around the inexperience part. And those are my suggestions for the new agent right up front. Now, Annie Yeo, are you on the call? Annie? Okay, if you are on the call, hit star 6. That'll unmute you. Just hit it one time, star 6, just one time. And and then say hello. Are you there, Annie?
Good morning. Yes, I'm here.
Good morning, Annie. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, so listen. Now, gang, I'm going to do a specific answer here for Annie. And for those of you that this doesn't apply to, please listen because it may apply to you in the future. It's very powerful what I'm about to share with you. And I want to say something before the call is over. So just hang in there with me. We've got 8 more minutes. And I'm going to do this with Annie in 5. And then in the 3 minutes, I'm going to share with you something. Now, Annie, so your question was, is how do you hire somebody, an assistant, to work for you, yes?
Correct.
Annie, I'm going to give you the best system on how to find the best assistant. Are you ready, Annie?
Yeah.
Now, the person who taught me this, the guy's name is Mike Lafito. He's a top agent, does some speaking in Chicago. He taught me this. I've done it. It works incredibly well. The first thing you do, Annie, is you place an ad on Craigslist or any other vehicle. And the ad, what you want to do is tell people what the job is, brief description like you see any traditional ad, but you're going to tell them to call a phone number. This phone number is going to be a call capture number. Now, Annie, I'm not going to give you all the companies on how to find it because I don't want to recommend anyone, but if you were to Google call capture 800 number, something like that, they're very inexpensive, okay? And you can just rent it for like a month. So it's not a big financial investment. You don't have to sign up for a year contract or anything like that. Some of them give you a trial for 30 days free, blah, blah, blah. So what you're going to do, Annie, is place an ad that tells people to call this number. They call the number, and Annie, you're going to record a message on this number saying, you know, hi, this is Annie. You, thank you very much for inquiring about the assistant position for me as a real estate agent. What I'm going to do during this call, during this message, is I want to give you an outline of what the job is and the type of person that I'm looking for. Now, Annie, when you record this recording, you do not want to do a short recording. You actually want to make it a substantial recording. I really want you to explain what the job is, what's entailed, and telling them this is the type of person I'm looking for. For example, I'm looking for somebody who's a self-starter. I need somebody, I don't need drama in my life. I have enough drama in my own personal life. I don't need an assistant with drama. So if you have drama in your life, you can hang up now. Annie, you can be as much of a jerk as you want on this recording, because here's why. If somebody listens through the whole recording and makes it to the end, you now have weeded out a lot of people that you don't want to even talk to or interview. Are you with me on this, Annie?
Yes.
So this process, I'm weeding out. If I had 100 people call the call capture number, I may only get 20 people, 30 people that will actually listen to the whole message. Now, at the end of the message, I tell people how to send me their resume. On that message, you want to tell them, now, my personal email address is blah, 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 but I don't want you to send your resume there. What I want you to do is send your resume to this email address. So, Annie, I'm actually going to give them my personal email address and tell them not to send their resume there. I'm going to tell them to send their resume to a different email address. Why? Because I want to see if they follow instructions. So if anybody contacts me via my other email address, I know that they can't pay attention to details. That gets rid of them. The email address they're going to send their resume to is going to be a Gmail account that I set up. Now, this Gmail account, I can actually set up an autoresponder, meaning that whenever somebody sends an email to that account, which could be annieyeorealtor@gmail.com, when they send it to that, they're going to get an autoresponder that says, thank you for submitting your resume. As part of the process, I need you to take the attached questions and answer these questions. Now, they sent the email, the resume, they get an email back that asks them to answer questions about themselves. For example, what are your goals in the next 5 years, 10 years? What did you like best about your last employer? What did you like least about your past employer? What's your idea of the ideal job? So now, Annie, I'm going to have them fill out a questionnaire that's like about 10 questions long. Some of you are like, what the, Darryl, this is a lot of work. Exactly. Because if I have 100 people respond to my ad and only 30 people listen to the whole call and only 20 people answer the first email and then 10 people after that will actually answer the questions and email them back to me, now I've got 10 of the best applicants for me to spend my time at looking at their information. And out of those 10, I may call 5 in for a personal interview. Are you with me on this, Annie?
Yes.
The more hoops that they have to jump through and actually do it, the better assistant that they're telling you that they are. This is absolutely the best system in finding an assistant, is to make it complicated and hoops and answer questions and all that stuff. What I'm going to do, Annie, is I'm going to, at some point during this weekend, those questions that they have to fill out, the 10 questions, I'm going to put it on the website for you on the same page that says classroom. Okay, so give me till the weekend. I'll have it up there by Monday, okay?
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, you're welcome, Annie. Good job. All right, gang. The last thing I'm going to tell you, I'm going to just do this really quick because we've only got a couple of minutes. In this month's app magazine, there's around pages, the visuals start on page 23, and there's some really great ads and listing stuff that you can bring on an appointment. There's a great flyers. There's some really great stuff in here. So make sure you look at the magazine. One of my favorite pieces that I put in this month's magazine is from one of our students. Her name is Kai Sampson, and she created this. It's just beautiful what she did. It's a woman agent, and on there she's standing in front of a blackboard that says, do I really need an agent? And on the blackboard it has all these things spelled out, written out. Negotiate contracts, return appraiser's call, provide the appraiser with comps, negotiate repairs, make an appointment for inspections. It's like on this blackboard it has all of these things that we do as realtors. And then she has her website in that ad. It's really, I love, love, love this ad. I mean, you could use this as a mailing. You could use it as an ad. You could put it in your listing book. You can actually post it on Facebook, which I would love for you guys to do. So take the time to go through the magazine. There's a lot of gems in there, okay? All right, so listen, here's the last part I want to leave you guys with. A couple of things. Number one, whatever challenges you're going through, just remember, the universe doesn't give you any more challenges than you can't handle. So you can handle this. I know some of you probably like, you know, the faith would be like, I wish God didn't have so much confidence in me. Well, that's it. So that's number one. Number two is Nietzsche said, that which does not kill you makes you stronger. So for those who are going through challenges, those challenges are actually making you stronger for something that you need to be strong at. I'm going to say that again. You may, if any of you go through some challenges, it might be because you need to get emotionally stronger because something's good going to happen in your life, but you can't have it happen until you've gotten stronger. So the universe is getting you stronger for this breakthrough you're going to have, okay? The third thing is don't forget, I mean, we're going into the nice weather right now. Do not get distracted by the buyers. You need to get more shoes in your shoe store. The last thing is just if you improve just 10% a month, that's 120% in a year. So don't get overwhelmed with this business, but at least improve one or two areas, one or two skills in your business, and do that every month. And if you do that, you will double your production. Okay, gang, let me just – I'm going to do one thing here I just unmuted everybody so we could all hear everybody. So was this call good for you guys, yes or no?
Yes.
All right, great. We're going to thank you. We're going to post this call by the end of the weekend. So if you want to listen to it again, and there'll be other stuff on the website, so make sure you check in. Don't forget to email me your questions so that way I can take care of you, okay? All right, gang, go out there, make a difference. Don't forget the more people you help, the more money you make. So just go help a lot of people, okay?
Thanks, girl.
All right, you're welcome, gang. All right, bye-bye now. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.